From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of September 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. Department of Labor thinks it's time to ban grain elevators from hiring employees under the age of 18. Government scientists say significant levels of glyphosate herbicide have shown up in two farm states, and ADM is in the process of buying 9 grain elevators in the state of Wisconsin. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Futures finished up like this for the day. September wheat at $7.30, up 14.5. December at $7.75.5, 14.5 higher. And the March contract at $8.10, up 12.5. July futures, $8.22.75, up 8.25. That's the new crop 2012 soft red winter. The hard red in Kansas City finished July a dime higher at $8.87. And 0.75 cents. September soybeans up 21.5 cents. Settlement price at $7.50 and 1/4. That's actually corn, naturally. December futures $7.60, up 21.5. And March corn at $7.72 and 1/4, up 21.5 cents. May $7.78 and 1/2, up 22. July corn $7.82, up 22. December of next year at $6.59, up 12.25 for the day. September soybeans now $14.36, up 11.25. November at $14.45 and 3/4, up 11.25. In January, $14.55 and 3/4, 10.5 cents higher. The March at $14.59 and 3/4, up a dime. May at $14.54 and 3/4, up 8.5 cents. And November at $13.91, 8 cents higher on the afternoon. Bean meal futures at $3.77.80, $1.20 higher. September bean oil at $57.74, up 3 cents for the day. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract at $114.80, up $1.20. September feeders at $132.65. down a dime. Hogs up 62.5 cents. Back in 2 minutes. Taking a look at the outside markets, here's what the numbers look like. October crude oil futures, $86.59, down $2.34. Ethanol at $2.89 and 2/10, up 4 9/10. Natural gas at $3.86, that's 19 cents lower. Rather, that is 19 cents lower. October heating oil futures at $3.04 and 1/2, down 4 7/10 of a cent. And the gold futures on the day, $47.70 higher at $1,873.70 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,243, just about 250 points lower. The dollar at 74.75, up 0.28. The CRB index at 338. Down 2.65 on the day. The weather forecast looks like this. For the Urbana-Champaign this afternoon area, sunny and hot, a high near 100 degrees. Heat index values as high as 104. Southwest winds at 11 miles an hour, though gust as high as 17 tonight. Mostly clear, a low of 70 degrees. South-southwest winds at 3 to 7 miles an hour. And then Saturday, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Mostly sunny, the high tomorrow 92. West-southwest winds at 3 to 9. Saturday night, scattered showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low of 66. Northwest winds at 3 to 5. The chance of precip on Saturday evening set at 40%. And Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 77 degrees. North-northwest winds at 7 to 13. Sunday night, mostly clear, a low 55. On Labor Day, on Monday, sunny, a high near 72 degrees. That's right, we go from 100 today to 72 on Labor Day. Monday night, mostly clear, a low 51. Tuesday, sunny skies, a high of 74. Tuesday night, mostly clear, and a low of 52. Wednesday, sunny, and a high of 78 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly clear, a low 55. And Thursday of next week should show us sunny skies, a high near 80 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Steve Hilberg.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Visit us online at willag.org. Mike Zuzulo is back from Africa and on the line with us today to talk about the commodity markets. Mike, of course, in West Lafayette, Indiana, with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting right there in West Lafayette. Hi, Mike. How
was
the trip?
Hello, Todd.
How was your trip?
It was wonderful. It was one of those trips where you realize you live in the best country in the world, and you also realize that the economic theory and what you work on in terms of and analyzing commodities and the outside markets really do matter, because I went to a part of the world that has to endure a lot of importation. Other than maize, they import a lot of goods, and so you see a different side of the world in terms of trade. And as far as the conference goes, I really have never been to a conference where so much dialogue and sharing of information was so free-flowing. And so it was really, really helpful, really, really beneficial. But as I was leaving Johannesburg, there's actually some riots that were breaking out because of some political issues that really go all the way back to the apartheid issues from many, many years ago. And so it was kind of scary as I was getting into the Johannesburg airport. It was starting to get a little bit nervous, and I actually went through six or seven checkpoints in security in the Johannesburg airport. So it made me appreciate very much what we have here in this country.
I will check, and I know you can tell us more about the conference that you attended and what it is in a moment. Did you get a chance while you were there to get outside of the city and to take in any of the countryside?
I did. Actually, Sunday morning, I got up early and I found a little church to go to, and I hired a driver that the hotel recommended. And that's the thing, is you really got to go with people's recommendations and do exactly what they say, because even when I was on the plane flying into Johannesburg, I met a really nice South African man, and I told him where I was staying, and he said, I'd like to help you get to where you need to go, because I don't want you to be left alone, because I'm pretty concerned you may not make it where you need to go. And so really eye-opening experience, you know, pretty gullible American going into a different country. But, yeah, I got to this church on Sunday morning, and it was in a pretty poor part of Kempton Park, which is outside of Johannesburg. And again, it was really, really interesting to see the different type of people that you come across. And I guess it goes back to, you know, in the seminars I've been doing this summer and what I talked about in the economic side and the macro picture that you and I always talk about, there really is a place to talk about the demand and the demand erosion and the issues. When food prices go up, you really can start to change the politics of governments and I'll give you an example. Here in the United States, when I was coming back, I was leaving the Indianapolis airport, and I happened to find a station that Rush Limbaugh was on, listening to Rush Limbaugh, and he was reporting that a North Carolina ethanol plant had just declared Chapter 11, and he essentially, Todd, for the next 15 minutes, just railed on the ethanol industry, saying that it was all about the subsidy, all about, and it was very negative. And I sat there and I said to myself, it's not about that, it's about the supplies, it's about the weather as much as anything. But when you get food prices this high and you get energy prices this high, whether you are in South Africa or the United States, people tend to start getting upset about it, and depends on how they, you know, their emotions take them as far as how upset they get. But the bottom line is the best cure for high prices is high prices, and that's what we're going to have to contend with, I think, in the next 6 months.
Tell me a bit more about this, about Seaboard and what you discussed with them and the interaction you had with the South Africans and what the conference felt like to you.
Well, I think the big thing about Seaboard is that they're not a very well-known firm, and I don't know if they like it that way or what, but they're not very well-known, but they feed a lot of animals. It was just a couple years ago they bought Butterball Turkeys, and so they're one of the largest feeders of turkeys. I want to say they're fully integrated, up to 2 million hogs they feed a year here in the United States. They're very strong in Kansas and the Southern Plains. The neatest thing about them, other than the South African angle and the maize, and what they do in shipping, is that back here in the States, they were in the heart and in the major drought belt trying to feed animals. And one of the interesting things that the grain guy that did the presentation he was doing as a livestock feeder, he said before the June report, before that bearish June report and the acreage numbers came out, he said, we as livestock feeders were feeling like the ethanol people were probably getting close to breaking. They were probably going into the red, and they were probably going to have to start shutting down because of the high costs. But then the June report came out, and it gave them a new lease on life for a while. But the conclusion I drew from that was, if anybody's going to win this game between feeding and blending for ethanol, it's going to be the feeders. They're going to pay whatever they have to feed those animals, maybe at lighter weights, but they're going to feed them. And I think we're probably going to hit price levels here where the ethanol plants start to have a little bit more problems making profits. And so that was an interesting take. Now, over in South Africa, the big thing with Seaboard in particular was that they saw a maize issue over there where they were looking at a lower supply of maize, a lower production. They had had a drought over there, and they were kind of scrambling around a little bit to try and secure some more business. When it came to shipping and the wheat market, it was almost the exact opposite. Most of the wheat information I picked up was more bearish, that Australia was looking at a much bigger crop than they were thinking earlier, maybe a month ago from the consultants over there. It's going to be a lot of feed wheat. So you're probably back to a similar situation where the wheat is going to be continue to be more of a pressure on price for corn here in the next 3 to 5 months.
And correct me if I'm wrong, and you may not know the answer to this, but Seaboard also plays an important role along the southern coast of the United States with the fisheries and the shrimpers. Is that true?
They did not talk. That is true, but they talked nothing about that. This seemed to be all about grains and more the red meat and poultry. But you're right, but there was no one there representing that area. Most of the people that came from Seaboard were either from Australia, from South Africa, or from Kansas.
Yeah, I dealt with them, just not with them directly, but dealt with some of the shrimpers and the fisheries through extension a couple of years ago when we were dealing with the BP oil crisis there in the Gulf of Mexico. So let's go back. So they deal, livestock side is mostly poultry then?
Poultry and pork, yeah.
Poultry and pork. So though I wondered about that, and when you suggest that they'll have lighter weights. When we get to, did they talk much about beef cattle? Because it seems to me that that one probably is not going to be in the same type of battle that the poultry and the pork producers would, where they might be able to make that, but there simply won't be the brood cows and heifers around to replenish the stock coming out of Texas and the Southwest that simply have been decimated by the drought.
No, that's exactly right. In fact, what I told my livestock guys since I've been back, especially the hog guys, is that to me, what you just said is a huge issue, that you're going to have these large cattle on feed numbers come through. You're going to have the poultry people continue, especially if corn prices keep going high. You're going to see them continue to lighten up and liquidate. So you're going to have a lot of competing meats between now and the next 6 months. After 6 months from now, though, the pork guys are sitting very, very well. The constraining factor for the pork people, based upon what Seaboard was telling us at the meeting, was there's just not literally enough barns to finish out hogs right now because of the cycle of liquidation we went through back two and a half years ago. So I think there's going to be an active, if the economy doesn't get bad enough and the premiums are high enough and the profitability is there to feed, in other words, the pork price stays high enough, I think you can actually see a round of building or expansionary phase coming in the hogs, within the next 6 months, that probably they would target the end of the beef surge of supply surge and the end of the poultry supply surge somewhere in the next 6 months. They'd be primed and ready to be able to take advantage of that because they'd have less competition at the meat counter.
Hey, go back to the ethanol and Rush for just a second. I'm thinking that not long after 9/11, that Rush would have been one of those that would have been on the big push for the ethanol side, because this one is a secure energy security issue as much as anything, and that's when the build-out of ethanol plants started for the United States.
I couldn't agree more with you, and I think that's where the culture in Washington has started to, I think, flow back into the culture in the United States, that all of a sudden, because ethanol is under a type of government support, that it's automatically going to be deemed as negative and bad because of the recession we're in. And it goes back to, why would Rush have validity to talk about that? In my opinion, it's because gasoline prices, if you take out 2008 levels at September 1, which were like $3.69 a gallon, this week, September 1 gas price is the highest since the Department of Energy has been taking records. So I think his mindset would be, it's a government mandated issue, but it's not bringing prices down. He leaves out that all critical issue of what the corn supply has been doing. And so I think what's happening, and this is what I think as producers, 100-degree day, nobody wants to talk about selling, you know, and nobody wants to talk about selling after the Farm Progress Show. But what we're going to have to start to contend with is this blowback politically and from people and the end users, because keep in mind, unlike 07, 08, I think a major factor here, Todd, is that the end users or the users of commodities did not pass on price increases in 07, 08. Their margins were good enough, they didn't have to. This time around, they're not going to be able to do that. So the higher we go in the raw materials and the commodities, the end users and the retail markets are going to fall, are going to face that pressure more and more. So I think you're going to get more and more blowback when it comes to a rally. And so the bottom line for me when it came to that presentation I gave over there was I wouldn't mind a little 1980s-type stagflation to cool commodity prices off, have a recession that is not a deep recession. I'd rather have that and cool off demand a little bit than destroy demand and have like an 07, 08 type market reaction that we all don't want to have again.
Okay, a couple of other things. You mentioned supply a couple times, some Landwirth numbers, some FC Stone numbers floating around. FC Stone, what, down at 146, I think, nationwide for corn, off on soybeans. I didn't see the Landwirth numbers, but they must have been sharply lower as
they
well.
They were, yeah, 143.3. Ooh. With a plus or minus, I think, 3 bushel number on that. But the trade saw that 143.3, and from what I picked up from the guys at EFG once I came back stateside, the trade was probably trading about a 40, 41 bushel or 40 bushel yield on beans, but probably up around 147, 148 on corn. This 143 number really changed a lot the mindset from Thursday, and the fact that the USDA showed in their recent ag update that exports were dropping, you know, from fiscal year 2011 to fiscal year 2012. In some cases, double-digit percentages. The USDA cut the wheat demand and wheat exports by 15% in that report dated August 31st that the market got around to looking at yesterday. That all changed when that Landwirth number came out. So you could see the corn was the real star of the show here today, whereas beans had weather. They didn't get as much bullish news from either Stone or Landwirth, and the wheat never picked up the pace. That wheat never came along for the ride with corn that much, and so beans and wheat were definitely laggards. Corn was the star. I don't think that can continue very long, though, Todd. I think once we come back from the holiday, if the outside markets remain weak and if the wheat and the beans don't want to play ball, I think the corn's going to have a hard time going higher simply because the weather should be most bullish for beans in terms of the dry and hot conditions. We're losing bean yield a lot more than we are corn yield now, and also if we stay hot and dry in the southern plains, which is one of my, I just got a weather update from one of my consultants that said, don't look for any changes in the southern plains. I would think Kansas City wheat would be the star of the show once we come back from the holidays as far as upside prices. And that's the other thing we did talk about down in South Africa. The seaboard people were very nervous about how the hard red wheat belt got planted here in the next 30 days, and the buyers down there were very nervous if that didn't go well.
We sure do appreciate you taking the extra time. I guess I'm as tired as you are.
Yeah, I don't know who's tired, more tired.
All right, well, you get some jet lag sleep if you can and catch up over the Labor Day weekend.
You too. Have a good holiday, Tom. And thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Joined us here on this closing market report for a Friday afternoon.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report. You can visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now here's Dave with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Department of Labor is proposing to ban children under the age of 18 from working around grain elevators. According to Purdue University, 26 people died in U.S. grain elevator accidents in 2010. Six of the fatalities involved children under the age of 16. The Labor Department is also proposing to increase, for the first time in four decades, a list of jobs that it considers too hazardous for children 15 and younger to perform on the farm. Under the regulatory changes proposed by the Labor Department, people who are hired to do such things as drive most farm equipment would have to be at least 16 years old. Government scientists at the U.S. Department of the Interior and the U.S. Geological Survey Office say that significant levels of Monsanto Company's Roundup herbicide have been detected in air and water samples from two U.S. farm states. Glyphosate, the key ingredient in Roundup herbicide, was found in every stream sample examined in Mississippi in a two-year period and in most air samples taken. Tests were also done in Iowa. The research did not look at the impact of the glyphosate in the air and water. The purpose was purely to determine exposure. More research is needed to analyze the implications, including how harmful the chemical might be to people and animals. EPA has set a deadline of 2015 for determining if glyphosate should be continued or sold in some limited way. Archer Daniels Midland said it acquired 5 grain elevators in Wisconsin and contracted to acquire 4 more in the state. ADM also assumed the lease for another Wisconsin elevator, expanding its grain storage capacity with the series of deals by about 20 million bushels. ADM said grain from the facilities will supply its domestic processing plants, local dairy operations, and export markets. FC Stone today projects that U.S. farmers will harvest 12.350 billion bushels of corn and 3.030 billion bushels of soybeans in 2011. FC Stone became the latest crop forecaster to cut its outlook for the U.S. corn and soybean production. The projections were made using an average corn yield of 146.3 bushels per acre and an average soybean yield of 41.05 bushels an acre. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. Do visit us online when you have the opportunity at willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
On this Friday afternoon, time to check the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard is with us. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
Any shucking taking place in your area?
We had 2 loads of corn late yesterday afternoon, just taking a few end rows off to test the waters, right around 24% moisture.
And
most of the coffee cans have been 31 to 34%, though.
So another week?
Yeah. Watch out Tuesday.
Watch out Tuesday. They'll start rolling. Well, everybody should get their sleep then before then. What do you see in basis?
The old crop basis has been, well, we lost ground earlier in the week and just fairly steady right now. And actually, I guess let's put it just as the first part of September rather than old crop, new crop now. Beans, we continue to lose ground on the nearbys as it comes into just a generic fall type basis. We've seen that back off from like 15 under earlier in the week to 23 under nearby.
And your bids?
We are at 751 on corn and 1423 on beans.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Buy into some of our stations now.
It's National Blueberry Popsicle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1666, the Great Fire of London began in the shop of the King's Baker. After burning for 4 days, more than 13,000 buildings had been destroyed. In 1752, it was the last day of the Julian calendar in Great Britain and the British colonies. The Gregorian calendar, designed to correct the extra leap year day problem, went into effect the next day, tomorrow being September 14th. Hence, 11 days were dropped. Most other countries made the adjustment in 1582. In 1930, the first nonstop airplane flight from Europe to the U.S. became a reality as a pair of French pilots landed in Valley Stream, New York, after a 37-hour flight across the Pacific. In 1935, the Labor Day hurricane hit the Florida Keys. Over 400 were killed, and the railway to Key West was destroyed. Winds were estimated at 200 miles per hour. And in 1995, Bjork Hillstrom died. He was the inventor of the Silva Compass, which featured a rotation compass dial and a transparent protractor base plate. He also wrote, "Be Expert with Map and Compass," considered by many to be the Bible of orienteering. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Time to check the weather forecast. Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center is on the phone line. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd.
It's hot, but it's a dry heat.
Yeah, this is much better than what we had to suffer through a good part of July, with not only temperatures this hot, but dew points about, actually in some cases, 15 degrees higher than what they are right now. So definitely a difference. And the other thing that's helping a bit is we do have a pretty good southwest to south breeze out there. So the combination makes the heat a little bit easier to take, especially if you're in the shade. Still pretty hot if you're standing out in the full sun. But right now we're seeing temperatures in the mid to upper 90s throughout Illinois. We got 102 reading at Taylorville, which seems a little off, so I'm not sure that's real. But it is 100 in St. Louis, and again, mostly temperatures are between 95 and 99 across the state.
And if you don't like it, it is Illinois. Wait a while, right?
Yeah, especially this time of year. September's usually a good time to get hot weather because it doesn't last very long. And we are going to have a fairly strong cold front come through here tomorrow evening. At least come through central Illinois tomorrow evening. It'll start out, of course, in the northwestern part of the state a little bit earlier in the day and then progress through the rest of the state overnight tomorrow night. And that will bring a rather drastic change to our weather. We're going to see a pretty nice day on Sunday and Monday for the close out the Labor Day weekend with temperatures well below normal. In fact, on Labor Day, we'll see probably, we may not even see 70 in parts of northern Illinois, but low 70s central Illinois, mid to upper 70s south, and then gradually warming during the week with temperatures generally remaining below normal, but warming up through the 70s to maybe 80 by the end of next week.
Get the firewood out and have a nice bonfire for Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, as long as you're not in one of those areas that are really, really dry right now. the one good
well,
thing
I
is,
guess that's true.
Yeah, the cold front should trigger some showers and thunderstorms as it comes through. I don't think it's going to be a huge problem. We don't expect really any severe weather. If you're planning on heading to the Illini game tomorrow afternoon, yes, there's a possibility it could rain a little bit, but it's not going to be something that's going to be too bad. And I think, you know, there's a good chance you could get through the game without anything with the rain coming through in the evening.
And frankly, the producers would like a rainfall to finish out the bean crop, if nothing else. The corn's probably done, but they could still manage something with the beans.
Yeah, and I think most people at this point, looking at their lawns and their gardens and everything else, would welcome the rain no matter what the consequences at this point.
Any rainfall over that 7 to 10 day period? I didn't hear anything really through Monday.
Not much. The only thing that's sort of fly in the ointment is the tropical depression in the Gulf, which actually will likely become Tropical Storm Lee later today if it hasn't already. That moisture is expected to stream northeastward through it, Kentucky, not quite getting across the Ohio River, maybe into southern Indiana. It should stay east of Illinois, unfortunately, but parts of Kentucky and Ohio should get some rain out of that.
Thanks so much, Steve.
All right.
Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Have a great afternoon. Be sure to visit our website so you can listen to Commodity Week. We'll post that at about 6 o'clock this evening. Four panelists actually in studio with us, including Paul Cooley, Aaron Curtis, Dan Zwicker, and Greg Johnson. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.